Less than 2 weeks after the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, which sent shockwaves through the US banking system, the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates again. ING's head of research in the Americas, Porrit Garvey, says the move supports the Fed's view that the banking system is sound and resilient.
It does show a degree of confidence, and on top of that, a bit of a hawkish tint to what they had to say, they're setting themselves up for further hikes.
The decision follows a move by the European Central Bank this month to raise rates by 50 basis points, despite fears over Europe's banking system, following huge outflows at Credit Suisse and a government-backed UBS takeover. Antoine Bouvet, head of European rate strategy, says the ECB sees financial stability and price stability as separate issues.
The impact this will have on growth potentially is much less certain. So in that environment, it's understandable that the ECB chooses to largely ignore it, treat it as a risk rather than something that will impact the economy with any degree of certainty.
I'm Rebecca Byrne, and this is Think Aloud. Porrit, this was a very close call for the Fed, wasn't it? Because although hiking rates could be seen as an expression of confidence in the system, it could also exacerbate the stress for regional banks. Did they make the right decision given the level of uncertainty right now?
I think they did, Rebecca. There was effectively a green light for them to deliver a 25 basis point hike. I mean, it was 80% discounted. So if they were to not hike, it would have been a bigger shock. I mean, consider the scenario where they didn't hike. We would have been saying to ourselves, well, what do these guys know that we don't know, given that there's a banking crisis effectively going on out there at the moment? So delivering a 25 basis point hike was the right thing to do because it was practically discounted, and it does show a degree of confidence. And on top of that, not only did they deliver a 25 basis point hike, but they're not giving any indication that they're done. In fact, there was a bit of a hawkish tint to what they had to say. They're setting themselves up for further hikes. So on balance, given the week we've had, with the vulnerability in the financial system, the silver lining is that that rate hike gives us a bit of confidence that these guys know enough to be confident enough to do 25 and we roll on. So all good.
Well, central bankers in both the US and Europe have tried to make the distinction between financial stability and price stability, saying they have the tools to manage both separately. But they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, are they? Because at some point, the two can become interconnected.
No, absolutely. I have a bit of an issue with this notion that they are mutually exclusive. I mean, the starting point for central bank policy is to have a stable system, because what central banks do is they raise rates, and they raise rates to tighten conditions. If the system is not in a good state to begin with, it's very difficult to tighten the system because you effectively will take down the system. So the starting point is have a stable system, but after that, let's battle inflation. And that's been the case so far this year. But right now, central banks have got to be really careful because clearly the system is taking these rate hikes badly, and we're coming to the end of the rate hiking cycle. And very often towards the end of the rate hiking cycle, you can have things creak. So there is some evidence of that, which will have to cause central banks to slow down on rate hikes. And interestingly, Chair Powell has made it clear that the tightening of financial conditions, in fact, can substitute for rate hikes. So clearly there's evidence there that it does matter.
Now, one of the tools used to shore up confidence in the system is this new term funding program, which will make it cheaper for banks to borrow money. You say it's not quite quantitative easing, but it goes in the opposite direction to the tightening process that's ongoing. Explain to us what this means for the Fed.
Yeah, so the Fed has a quantitative tightening program, which means that they're allowing bonds to roll off their portfolio. They're downsizing the size of their bond holdings. But if you look at this facility, this new facility, what they're saying to banks is, look, if you give us your bonds, we'll give you liquidity, which is precisely the opposite to quantitative tightening. So it's in a way, it's a different bucket, but it does end up with bonds going back onto the balance sheet of the Fed and the Fed generating more liquidity, which is precisely the opposite of quantitative tightening.
Our US economist James Knightley was calling for rate cuts this year, even before the recent banking turmoil. And markets seem to have come around to a similar way of thinking. What does this mean for market interest rates?
So rate cuts mean lower market rates, But it depends on the timing, because typically what happens is before the Fed peaks, the 10-year rate would peak first and begin to move lower before the Fed has actually finished the hiking process. So that's what's happening now. The 10-year is moving lower. The 2-year is going to be far more responsive to what the Fed is doing now and what the Fed will do over the next 18 months. So this whole idea of the Fed doing a couple of more hikes and then cutting is going to ultimately result in the 2-year following the 10-year lower. And that will steepen the curve, which is what would typically happen as you go into a rate cutting cycle. We're not rate cutting just yet, but the curve will begin to position for that by disinverting and positioning for a steeper curve from the front end, which means rates falling at the front end relative to the back end.
Well, I want to probe a little bit more about the inversion of the yield curve. Often an inverted curve is a sign of trouble ahead. So in a way, the banking turmoil shouldn't come as much of a surprise. It's still inverted, though maybe not as much as it was before. How do you see this playing out?
Well, the thing about the curve inversion is that it was at its most exaggerated in modern times only a couple of weeks ago, which is telling us that the marketplace was concerned about the future. It wasn't necessarily telling us that we're going to have a banking crisis, but it was telling us that we should prepare for a recessionary tendency. So it doesn't have to stay inverted. It just needs to invert at a moment in time, mark that discount for future problems ahead, and then it can go ahead and disinvert. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing this disinversion process starting. And that's all to do with the fact that the Fed is nearly done in terms of hiking and will turn to cutting. And that cutting process typically correlates with an environment where something has gone wrong. The economy has become very weak, or the banking sector has become weak, which necessitates those cuts. And that ultimately steepens out the curve.
Antoine, rate hikes are seen as a key part of regional banks' problems in the US, but that's not the case in Europe, is it? The ECB doesn't seem to be overly concerned about the Credit Suisse situation, having hiked rates by 50 basis points. So what does all this mean for rates in Europe?
Yeah, no, we don't really see an impact yet in European rates market. Chairman Powell was very clear in his press conference that there will be an impact on availability of credit and therefore growth and therefore inflation in the US. But we have no such conviction in Europe. The ECB was very clear that the realm of financial stability and monetary policy are two separate things at the moment. And the impact this will have on growth potentially is much less certain. So in that environment, it's understandable that the ECB chooses to largely ignore it, treat it as a risk rather than something that will impact the economy with any degree of certainty.
Although most ECB policymakers remain quite hawkish, we've had a very aggressive hiking campaign already, and it's clearly starting to bite, maybe in some unexpected ways. You have said that one positive for the markets is that there really isn't a next or an obvious next domino to fall, but the burning question is how weak are the weakest links and how are they dealt with if they break? How concerned are you about contagion in the region, and how confident are you that the ECB would be able to deal with any potential fallouts?
There's a lot of questions within that question. I think on the general risk of contagion, I think as much as it is very difficult to put a probability on it, I would say that after the events at the weekend, the merger between UBS and Credit Suisse, and the events at the prior weekend when the Fed injected a lot of liquidity in the banking system, I think taken together, these two events do reduce quite sharply the probability of contagion in the wider market. Now, of course, we need to also admit the things we don't know. I don't think a lot of people saw the recent banking crisis coming, to be completely honest. So we also need to know what we don't know. So that's the first thing. But yeah, it remains a risk. The ECB, whether they will be able to deal with it, it depends on the type of risk it is. If it's just a crisis of a lack of liquidity, for example, they have tried and tested tools to inject liquidity in the economy and the banking system. So quite a lot of these crises they could be equipped to deal with. But as you've seen in Switzerland, ultimately it's the fiscal authorities and the states that decide whether to enforce some merger or some bailout of some, or indeed the insurance of some depositors. That authority doesn't lie with the ECB.
Antoine, in the Credit Suisse debacle, regulators wiped out the so-called AT1 bonds, these additional tier one bonds. And it caused quite a lot of anxiety because usually it's the shareholders that get wiped out first. Are there any implications for the wider market?
For that specific market, I'm sure there are some, although we did get reassurances by authorities, including in the Eurozone, that the your understanding and mine of how these various tranches rank was indeed correct. Now, with the market, there is always a bit of policy uncertainty, and then let's be completely honest. There's a bit of discretion that governments, regulatory authorities, central banks have in the way they will deal with any crisis. So that uncertainty is there. Is it significant at a global level more than it was before? Maybe it was a useful reminder, but I think overall, the way markets are trading at the moment, I would say this is consistent with central banks, fiscal authorities, and so on and so forth being very much on the front foot. I would take that example. Last weekend, the Fed, the European Central Bank, Bank of England, and another number of developed market central banks decided to preemptively make more dollar funding available outside of the US. That's the sort of reaction I think that shows that they are very much on the front foot and the market is trading all the better for it.
Okay, final thought on UK rates. We had inflation coming in above 10% in February, which was a bit of a surprise. But our UK economist James Smith thinks the Bank of England is nearing the end of its tightening campaign. What does this all mean for gilts?
Well, gilts, like other government bonds, should be ultimately heading lower, high in price, low in yield, when we have confirmation that this hiking cycle at the global level is over. Now, we don't have confirmation of that yet, but the Bank of England's dropped some pretty heavy hint that we are getting to a phase where they're happy to wait and see, so pause the interest rate hikes and wait for the effect to feed through to the economy and to impact inflation. So we're very much close to that point. After that, we will depend on the data, but I think there will be a point later this year when, in conjunction with US Treasury market and to a lesser extent, Bund, long-dated interest rates will start to fall to reflect the fact that we are now done with hikes and we are focusing on cuts much earlier in the Fed than in other places, but that will affect the gilt market. So as a forecast, we think 10-year gilts will converge to 3%. We got not far from that given the financial crisis, but we think something more durable will occur at the back end of this year.
Okay, Antoine Bouvet and Porrit Garvey, thanks very much.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Thanks, Rebecca.
This podcast has been prepared by ING solely for information purposes, irrespective of a particular user's means, financial situation, or investment objective. The information does not constitute investment recommendation, and nor is it investment, legal, or tax advice, or an offer or solicitation to purchase or sell any financial instrument. Read more at think.ing.com/content-disclaimer.